only one additional senator, we can go into a public hearing on House Bill 205. This is the Cultural Joint Interim Task Force, and I wonder if we might have a report from Legislative Fiscal Office at this point.
Mr. Chair, this measure came to us from the House Committee on Commerce. It is sponsored by the Speaker of the House. It creates a Cultural Joint Interim Task Force within the Arts Commission as part of the Economic Development Department, and I believe we have Mr. Harvey and other folks here available to testify. It's a little bit, it's actually fairly simple, but a little bit complicated. The governor's recommended budget included $200,000 for his task force on cultural development. It is my understanding that this task force essentially replaces that one, but continues the work of the governor's task force. The budget for the Economic Development Department includes the $200,000 and the FTE. However, it is our intention to remove the funding out of the department's budget and instead attach it to this bill.
Okay. Thank you very much. We have a sign-up sheet for anyone that would like to go ahead and speak. We would like to invite Mr. Harvey up on behalf of the Special Advocacy Group. Harvey?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Larry Harvey, for the record. I am here today on behalf of the Cultural Advocacy Coalition. There are several members of the coalition and other experts in the audience. If you have more specific questions, this might go over my head, and guarantee that probably some of them will come up. The information that you are currently receiving for your benefit, and you may know about this already, and in fact, some of you may have even had an opportunity to participate in receiving the report, but as a background for exactly what the intention of this legislation is, you just received copies of the task force report that the was put together as a result of the task force that was organized through the governor's office. This has been an ongoing effort for several years, and upon the advice of both the governor's office as well as legislative leadership, the members of the task force were strongly advised that a couple of things that needed to be done was to unite together so that they could work in a more cooperative manner as a team and identify specific outcomes that they hoped to achieve. So in accordance with that those suggestions, they have done just that. One of the outcomes of that recommendation, of course, was the formation of the Cultural Advocacy Coalition. Now, the Governor's Task Force came up with several recommendations, as you can see as you peruse your report there. One of the results of recommendations is that people often expect that some type of action will be taken. And so to continue the efforts of the recommendations in the report itself, one, the Cultural Advocacy Coalition was not only formed, but two, contacts were made with a variety of different legislative leaders, and one of those contacts, as you can tell from House Bill 2005, was Representative Snodgrass. She became personally interested. I don't want to necessarily speak for her, but I think it's obvious that she has an interest in the bill as the sole sponsor. So, and she did testify in the Substantive Policy Committee upstairs regarding her personal interest and the ongoing accomplishments that the task force might hope to achieve. So I'm sure that when she returns from her business elsewhere that she could substantiate that or answer any questions that you have. This bill, as you can tell, specifically establishes a temporary, not a permanent by any stretch of the imagination, a temporary group or organization, if you will, committee that would determine how best to implement a variety of recommendations. The overall goal, since we're talking in such technical language, let's be practical here for a minute and say that the overall goal is a concern or an interest in integrating some of the aspects of who and what Oregon is, our culture, our heritage, our art, those who not only promote or advocate, but those who actually deliver, who create the deliverables, as a matter of integrating that back into not only our individual communities, but the state as a whole. This would make partners, better partners, out of not only the Heritage Commission, the Humanities Commission, the Arts Commission, and a variety of other organizations that have all partnered on this. And as you know, we had many of those folks here just last week to also not only reconvene as a summit, a group to discuss their interests and objectives, but also to spend time with their individual lawmakers, encouraging them that this is in fact something that is has more of a grassroots foundation than the idea of two or three people who decided that this would be a great way to employ another lobbyist during the 1999 session. So, having said that...
Mr. Chair, Representative Krepp is recognized.
Thank you. And who might that lobbyist be, Mr. Harvey?
That would be, Mr. Chair, Representative Krepp, that would be me currently.
I see. Okay. I can clarify that now.
If he shows up, we'll let you know. The specifics of the bill, I think, again, as you can tell, this is would be a temporary interim task force. 7 members would be appointed by the governor. 2 members would be appointed respectively by the Senate President and the Speaker of the House. The task force would be created within the Economic Development Department, as is noted in Section 1. If you go down to a variety of subsections, particularly I draw your attention to subsection 5, and you have 3 specific issues that the task force is required to meet or make recommendations on. Those recommendations are to be returned to the 71st Legislative Assembly, which would demonstrate that, in fact, they've done their work. The task force is sunsetted. I guess that would be an okay term to use. It comes to an end. It's a limited duration. And the Economic Development Department specifically manages the business of this particular task force. So they would be under the jurisdiction, if you will, of the director of the department. And I do know that Doris Finwell is here if you have specific questions about the management of that. There are other items, as you can see, that are addressed in the bill, but they're not necessarily before this subcommittee at this point. That does not mean that we're unwilling to address them, but I think specifically it seems as though we're here to address the $200,000 for the work to be accomplished by the task force. Other issues such as the trust fund account, as I understand it, they're located in other legislation that has not been approved yet, so we have lots of ideas about that, but we'll limit our discussion at this point to specifically listen to 2005. I think that covers the intention and the high points of the bill. I don't know if you have any questions, but I'd be happy to respond.
Well, in the copy of the bill I have, Section 3 sets up the trust fund. Now, do I have a bad copy? I've got A and Grace back to 2005. And it says a cultural trust investment account is assessed. I guess it's not maybe the fund, but the account is established, whatever it is. And it's going to earn interest, but where's this going to get its money?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, that is an excellent question, and I'm glad you asked.
That's good. An excellent answer.
Yes, I do have
other classes received.
In the governor's recommended budget, there was a recommendation that $1 million be earmarked or set aside to initially serve as seed money for this fund. And
that's still in the budget, in his budget?
It's still in the... It arrives here in the legislature as part of the governor's recommended budget. As I understand it, that, and I think maybe your staff person would be a better source than I, but it's my understanding that that $1 million would be earmarked now for the emergency board fund, and the procedure would be that the task force would need to then go to the emergency board and ask for the money to be transferred into the account.
So the governor's budget accounted for $1 million as seed money to get this account started, and and that's going to go to the e-board, but once things are rolling along, they can come and ask for it, and then it should be put into this account and can draw interest and can be seed money to raise other money. Is that the way you understand it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trill, that's the way. That is our hope, notwithstanding, of course, that the collective wisdom of the Assembly could decide whatever else they might want to do. As far as I know, I have not seen any specific language that would establish parameters as to how the money is withdrawn from the e-board to be placed into the account, so I have to assume that that's still up for discussion.
Mr. Chair, there's no discussion in the bill itself as to how money from the trust investment account is to be spent. Whether the whatever initial investment is there, the capital can be drawn upon, or is it only the interest that that eventually will be expendable, or whether we're going to keep the interest adding to the fund as well. Do you know how that works, Mr. Harvey?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Senator Trump, I'm looking for the exact language here. Mr. Chair, Senator Trump, members of the committee, if you will take a look under Section 1, Subsection 5, with the responsibilities of the interim task force, Subsection C suggests that the task force is charged with the responsibility of establishing the operation and distribution guidelines for the cultural trust investment account. And under Section 3 of this act, that would, in a manner that it would ensure long-term stability for funding cultural and heritage and arts projects. So the reason that there is no specific language in this bill is because it was considered appropriate to have the partners coalesce, if you will, and determine what the appropriate expenditure of capital, interest, investments, et cetera, would be.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. On the front page of the staff measure summary, under the staff committee assignment amendment, the fifth bullet down says directs all monies in the cultural trust fund investment account to be continuously appropriated to the Economic Development Department. That means then that the money that's held in the trust fund investment account, what are they trying to convey by continuously appropriated to the Economic Development Department?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, at this point, it's obviously imperative that we have some place where the money goes. I think we all understand that ideally the money is really being kept by the Treasurer. However, the determination as to how the money is going to be managed is going to be determined through the task force that is also under the direction of the Economic Development Department. So one would assume, I suppose, that the intention here is that the Economic Development Department would be the fiduciary party responsible for keeping oversight over the fund until such time that the task force brings a report back. And since that can't happen until the 71st Legislative Assembly, I suppose it would be reasonable to assume that the next session would include some discussion about whether the fund should stay with the Economic Development Department, whether it should go with the Oregon Community Foundation Fund, what would be the parameters for expenditure of the interest or capital, and so on. So the Economic Development Department, in the meantime, becomes the fiduciary party that's going to make sure that all that money stays there and earns lots of interest.
Okay, Mr. Chair, one last follow-up. In Section 3 of the bill, the Senator Pro was alluding to the line 33 says the account is to serve as a repository for both public and private money designated to fund specific arts, heritage, and humanities programs. I'm assuming that the amount that we're appropriating or would appropriate will qualify as the public portion of that. Do you anticipate gaining a certain amount of money from private sources to go into this, and again, who would make the determination as to where to spend the money on specific arts, heritage, and humanities programs?
Thank you, Representative Krupp. Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, yes, whatever the body of this assembly decides to appropriate into that investment account would be the initial public investment. We anticipate that there will be other opportunities in the future as the future assemblies deem appropriate to increase or continue to appropriate. The private sector has is more than willing to put money into whatever account would be appropriate. As a matter of fact, to be frank, the private sector was hoping to utilize this opportunity as a grant match. They wouldn't have a problem establishing any type of a match program if the public sector or this assembly was willing or was interested in doing such. In my many conversations with some of the advocates and supporters for a number of the organizations that are here today, they have been pretty faithful about making substantial contributions to the arts, and approximately 80% of the support for culture and the arts in this state comes from the private sector already. I could be off on that percentage, but more than the lion's share.
President is naturally recognized. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Larry, could you, maybe it's too soon after lunch, I know it's gone over lunch, but could you run through for me again the relationship to the government budget, both in the tasks and the funding?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Messerly, I also defer to Ms. Lamont to correct me if I misstate anything. Initially, the $200,000, which is actually the amount of money, revenue funds, I should say, that we're talking about here, was part of the governor's recommended budget, and I believe it was initially showed up in the Economic Development Department budget. The desire here is to simply take that recommended amount of dollars and appropriate it directly into the bill. When the recommendation was made into that particular budget, this bill was not available and was not developed until after January 1. Consequently, the bill anticipates that the recommendation was in there and would be managed somehow. And so, having accomplished that, and this bill has made it so far through this process, now the request is to take that recommended amount and appropriate it directly into 2005. 2005 establishes the investment account, but doesn't necessarily call for a dollar amount or a direct appropriation at this point. That $1 million, which was also in the governor's recommended budget, has been, should be considered to be included at some point in the emergency board fund, which, as most of us know, isn't determined until the end of the session anyway. So,
sure, well, a follow-up. So we're not talking new money. We're just moving the money from the governor's budget into this program.
Mr. Chair, especially that's my understanding.
Thank you.
Sure.
I
saw Reverend Cummings' little program, little pronounced for his, and I beg your pardon, Reverend Cummings, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That makes me feel so much better. We're good that we can get away with it.
Why are we, it says here on the staff member summary, it says that this task force is expected to replace the governor's task force on cultural development. Why are we doing that? What's the purpose of it? Does the governor's executive order sunset at a particular period of time, or why are we doing this if he's already got one?
Mr. Chair, Representative Trump, probably that would be a past tense statement. The governor had one and doesn't have one now. But more significantly, this is a cooperative effort. We have seen in the past problems that develop when the process is not inclusive. So to be perfectly honest, it was reasonable to suggest to the Cultural Advocacy Coalition that this is not just a single focus by a small group, but in fact there is statewide interest in this. And consequently, on a statewide basis, we have 60 House members and 30 senators that also would have a vested interest in this bill, so we're going to give all of them an opportunity to support these recommendations.
Well, thank you. Can you explain to me why the governor doesn't have a task force any longer? Did he tell us to quit operation? I mean, it's an executive order. I guess I don't understand.
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, the governor's task force was time certain, and it ended at the end of 1998. So the question became, do we reissue a new executive order? But we, the way government works is that, we can recommend anything, but if the legislature doesn't fund it, then it's probably, a moot point. So to make sure that we followed all the rules, we felt that it was appropriate that this should have legislative action and thus also require a legislative report so that you folks would know you got your money's worth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Harvey, is there in fact, what happens if the $200,000, which is reflected in the governor's budget, is pulled out of the governor's budget and moved over to be the seed funding for the social commission? What happens if we're unable to find the $1 million, which would go to the emergency fund? How badly damaged would the Cultural Oregon Arts Commission be at that point?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it would be hard to assess the potential damage at this point. What we do know is that the committee, the task force would be able to do their work. But since part of their work is to determine the appropriate expenditure and parameters for stabilizing cultural heritage and arts funding in the state, we could probably write that report immediately after signing die and suggest that it's in serious doubt and needs immediate action. We understand how slim, if you will, the funds are. But if the body is not able to find the $1 million, then I guess what we have is a cultural trust fund with no funds.
I wasn't necessarily recognizing. Thank you, Mr. Chair, but wouldn't you still have your private sector donations to the trust fund that the task force would have to deal with?
Mr. Chair, Representative Meshley, we've always had the private sector funds. That's never been the issue. To be perfectly frank, the private sector decided that this would be a good way of engaging the legislative body to partner with us in raising money for something that is a concern to a number of Oregonians. So the short answer to your question is yes, we will have private funds, we will continue to have private funds, and we've always had private funds.
I guess my point is that what I heard your previous response, that if you didn't get seated for the $1 million, that the task force had nothing to do, and you could write your report when we finish the session. My point is that the task force will still have to deal with the private funds, allocation of those funds. Is that not true?
Chair, Representative Messerly, with regard to this specific account, this legislation simply allows money to be placed into a trust fund whereby the interest earnings could be utilized for specific projects. There is nothing in here that would prevent the private sector from doing what they're currently doing now. And so if we wanted to change the results or the mechanism as to how the private sector continues to support the arts, we could ask them to put it into this account as opposed to giving it directly to the Shakespeare Festival or the High Desert Museum or anything else. That would certainly be an option if this bill were to pass. It does not achieve one of the goals as stated in Section 1 of the bill, which is the stabilization or subsection 5 of the bill, which is the stabilization fund. The emphasis of the task force and the report suggests that there is no stable program or resource for making certain that our culture is preserved for our posterity.
I noticed that for purposes of the recommendations for the immediate steps that principal coastal partners include the Oregon Arts Commission, the Council for the Humanities, the Oregon Heritage Commission, State Research Preservation Office, Oregon Historical Society, the Oregon Museum of Science and History, and Oregon Public Broadcasting. Are they all currently contributing time, energy, equipment, in kind. What's the current relationship relative to the immediate step for 1989-2001 relative to this group of partners? Are they active with the intent of the Cultural Trust Fund at investment account?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, all of those partners have been active in the process to this point. They have been active in determining what the goals and outcomes should be. They participated in the ongoing discussions and the cultural summit that yielded the task force report. They haven't been active in the trust fund because it's not yet established, but they've been active in working toward raising funds to support themselves and to support each other. The Arts Commission in particular has been exceptionally supportive because it was that commission that provided all the staff support and a number of hours of research and labor to make sure that the cultural summits and the meetings and all the other cooperative efforts were staffed and organized.
Good. Section 501c3 Corporation here is a nonprofit corporation.
The Cultural Advocates, Mr. Chair, the Cultural Advocacy Coalition is a 501c4 a nonprofit established under the IRS code now.
Senator Crowe is recognized. We're calling it a joint interim task force. Does that mean it's a lot of time is just one interim, or is it going to last longer than that? Mr. Chair, it looks like the account that's being established, the second part of the bill, is going to be a permanent account. And so the task force is going to be a temporary task force that's going to draw up these guidelines and see to it that there's some kind of structure for cooperation among these groups. Who will then administer the money in the account? Who will help raise the private money, and who will make the appropriations to the various groups? How's that done?
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Trull, good question again. It is a temporary interim task force. The reason to substantiate that is simply because the organizations didn't want to come down to the legislature and ask for a long-term permanent organization to be established. The other underlying issue here is that the requesters of the bill did not want to place any parameters or restrictions around what the task force could do or develop as ideas for the ongoing organization. Would it be a private nonprofit and continue that way, which is certainly a possibility? Who would manage it? We didn't want to prejudice the task force by suggesting that a specific commission or government agency should manage the money so that we could have equal access and inventory of ideas would be unlimited.
Is the intention then to do some of this preliminary work and then come to the next session for some more permanent structure? Is that the intention?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Crowe. Again, that comes, I would say that comes under, again, Section 5, subpoints A and B talk about structure. A talks about benchmarks for preserving.
A little culture here. Music.
That's wonderful.
So, sound apologies. Apparently you can't turn these things off. Probably. And I just wondered how much the pig's going to take.
Mr. Chair, maybe we could put some of that money into the truck.
That was an elegant exit.
I thought it was almost
sounded like a very fast-paced sort of lead.
Anyway, to conclude, Senator Cole, you're right. You can take a look at it. It says measurable benchmarks. So they would specifically have recommendations as to setting not only guidelines, but how would we measure these to see if we're being efficient? If there's no way of measuring it, then that certainly doesn't It certainly seems to imply that we can't possibly measure progress, so gee, whatever we do must be progress. We'd like to be able to suggest to the 71st Legislative Assembly that we have a goal, we have a mission, and we have a plan for achieving those objectives, and these are the benchmarks by which we will be able to tell you that we're going to do it.
Then what would undoubtedly be established would be some kind of a permanent task force. Or what mechanism would there be to manage this trust with its $1 million if we don't have that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, it would seem that some type of structure is necessary because, paperwork doesn't manage itself. There's no intent that I know of and that I've been able to identify that the movement is towards creating a new commission or a new board or a new organization. We have a number of existing organizations that already could be left with economic development, and they could create a subcommittee of various members of all the other organizations that you see listed here. So it doesn't seem necessary to create anything else. It just seems a little bit more helpful to have everyone seeing off the same page, so to speak.
Somebody's going to have to take the lead in raising money for this account if you're going to depend upon private money. And somebody will have to make the decision about how to allocate money out of the account, especially the account's continuously appropriated to the Economic Development Department. That leaves it with that department to make those decisions, I think, right now.
Representative Butler, Representative Senator Trow, you're absolutely right. Right now, that's exactly how it would be left, and that's probably best for the interim.
Other questions for Mr. Hardy? The Section 2 repeals everything in Section 1, effective January 1st, 2002. That includes the 9-member board, the advisory board, including the non-voting advisory member appointed by the House and by the President of the Senate. Is that at that point it's assumed that then the cultural trust mortgage would continue on or continue on its merry way with whatever funding it would have and set up its own set of rules? Is that your understanding? No.
Mr. Chair, yes. Section 1, as you've noted, does repeal this in January 1, 2002. So that would be a few months after the 71st Legislative Assembly adjourned sine die, assuming that they get done when they normally get done, whatever that means. So there would be an opportunity there to transition from the task force to a recommendation, if it be a group of private citizens or those established folks already in economic development. They would then seemingly take with them the recommendations of this task force, just as we have utilized the governor's recommendations from a previous task force, mm-hmm. and determine how they could best be implemented. But there would be enough time for a transition. It wouldn't cost any more money. They're just available.
Do other states have these social trust funds, long-term stabilized social trust investment accounts separate and apart from whatever other organizations that are set up normally for the arts? I know there's national endowments for the arts and so forth. Do other states actually set up their own in addition to the national endowments for the arts?
Mr. Chair, there are a variety. I think we have a matter of semantics as well here. We've chosen to name it a specific type of account. A variety of investment accounts or endowment accounts are established throughout the United States. It just so happens that I'm fortunate enough that my youngest sister does the same type of work for the state of Washington, and I should probably qualify that. She doesn't do the same thing I do. She happens to be a certified public accountant and takes care of endowment accounts for a variety of arts organizations in the state of Washington, the most recent of which is the Symphony in Seattle. So, again, She's the numbers person in our family. I barely got out of my math class, but it's my understanding from her that this is not unusual, and I'm sure that we could ascertain that with other members in the audience.
You're numerically
impaired.
Impaired. But the record shows Mr. Harvey and I, Mr. Harvey's 10 years younger than I am, but we've got high school for 10 years.
That's the record in show.
That's because you are so proficient with numbers, Mr. Chair.
I just worked on it longer. Are there other questions? And we have established that there is a $200,000 amount set aside in the governor's budget, which we are taking under consideration and advisement, that we can transfer out to accommodate the first portion of this exclusive of the $1 million that the governor's budget proposal for $1 million we set aside in the emergency fund allocation to develop the public-private cultural trust fund. That fund is not yet identified, so
sure.
Senator Crowe is recognized.
Can we find those in the governor's economic development department budget? Are they specifically identified in that budget? So Steve went to look. We could find those numbers, Mr. Harvey.
Mr. Chair, Senator Crowe, that's my understanding, but again, I would defer to Ms. Lamont on that.
There is, Mr. Chair, Senator Crowe, there is a budget package in the Economic Development Department Arts Commission budget for the $200,000 and the one FTE. With the action on this bill, I would remove those dollars from the department's budget.
What about the $1 million? Is that someplace?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my understanding is that the governor's recommended budget, and I have not seen this as well, so I'm speaking from imprecise knowledge, that the budget for the bill for the emergency board contains a $1 million specific allocation. What the status of that is, I don't know.
Our Senator Ferriola is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have some questions about culture. Culture. I had a brush with culture once. Fortunately, I was thrown clear. This seems to be a fairly elitist definition of culture. The arts, the humanities, and it seems to be kind of the social science definition of culture. And I was wondering about there's a lot of Oregon culture that really doesn't fit the definition of the humanities and social sciences, although they're every bit as formative and informative. And in some cases, they're more legitimate, in my opinion, than some of the stuff that we're seeing in terms of art and the other humanities. And being a social sciences and humanities major, and that's what my degree's in, I'm kind of acutely aware of an elitist mentality that sometimes comes with it. So I wondered if I could ask this witness about culture.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ferrioli, first let me say that I'm happy that you had an opportunity to have a brush with culture. So that's wonderful. If you'll take a look at Section 1 of the bill, Subsection 1, actually I think that the real definition of what this committee would represent as far as culture, and again, bear in mind here, what we're talking about is the culture of Oregon. If any of you still have the balloons left from last week's rally, culture is defined on that balloon simply as a message of culture is who we are. Elitist, non-elitist, regular folk, no gender, no job description, nothing other than the population of those folks who live in this state. The makeup of the committee would include arts as well as community development, as well as education, our heritage, that is to say where we came from before we got here, historic preservation, and humanities, where you are much more familiar than I, and the tourism industry in the state, which is probably now the second largest economic resource the state has, only succeeded by agriculture. So through that broad definition, that still allows both the Senate President and the Speaker of the House to appoint representatives themselves of any area or in any area that they feel may be underrepresented or not necessarily noticed at this point. So while we're not going to specifically adhere to an elitist definition of what culture is, other than it is the very essence of our geographical and demographical makeup, we have made an attempt to, one, define what areas would be the primary part of this task force, and two, then given those task force members the option of appointing subcommittees in case there's a specific area that needs more special attention.
Mr. Chairman, I think the witness was discussing specifically what I wanted to talk about, but in terms of the symbol of the cultural renaissance and last week's celebration, I just want to make sure that the whole thing isn't symbolized by a latex bag filled with hot air, which is the balloon you refer to. Let me give you the example that I want to specifically refer to. In the philosophical, we talk about the understanding of our natural resources in the context of our human needs. I think that's an excellent objective philosophically. We've got county fairs in every county. We've got rodeos, we've got community celebrations, timber carnivals, ethnic festivals. There's even a Harley-Davidson rally in Fossil. It may not be the high point of everybody's social calendar for the year, but I guarantee you there's 4,000 to 8,000 people that think it's the best thing that happens in Fossil at any given point in time. And I wondered if those are the kinds of things that fit the definition of culture in Oregon, because as I read through, I don't get the impression that even though these things are formative and informative and generational, that they're really intended to fit under the definition of community and culture and customs, which are very important to communities. So I'd like to hear what you talk about the kinds of community events that include county fairs, rodeos, timber carnivals, ethnic festivals, and the history of natural resource producers in the state.
Mr. Chair, clarification from Senator Ferriol, if I might. Was that posed as a question, or were you simply looking for a discourse on that statement?
I guess, Mr. Chairman, if those events are not to be defined as Oregon's culture, then we've missed the mark by a wide point here in this whole discovery and discussion. If this is just about arts, humanities, and social sciences, and that's how we define Oregon's culture, then I'm not very excited about the idea.
Yeah, I think I have a better idea of what might be an appropriate response. Mr. Chair, Senator Ferrioli, I see nothing in the bill at this point that would preclude anything from coming under the definition of the things that you suggested as part of our culture. And specifically, because the things that you suggested are things that take place every day here. In fact, the Harley-Davidson Festival in Fossil, Oregon, would probably be a highlight of a variety of folks that you and I both know, and in fact could either fall under the definition of tourism, as far as that goes, or even community development, because I'm certain that those folks bring an enormous amount of economic resources with them when they come to Fossil, possibly the economic highlight of that town. So I agree that this should not be exclusionary, and I personally, at this point, I'm failing to see that any group is purposely excluded from the definition of culture at this point. My personal commitment to you is that that was not intentional if you're reading that into the bill, and that's exactly why we gave some latitude to the commission task or to the task force itself to appoint subcommittees to make sure that no group was overlooked.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I guess my point is that in major summary we talk about art, and I don't think anybody should mistake art for culture. Culture is a lot broader and a much more texturally rich fabric than just art, either the performing or the visual. But I just want to make sure that we're not excluding the real culture of Oregon when we're planning for a task force that looks at culture.
I can.
And Mr. Chairman, I voted yes on the helmet bill, so I can go to Fossil this year. Some of our members that might have a problem getting out of Fossil.
I think the point is well taken.
I would remind the members of the subcommittee that this bill has passed out of a committee, a substantive committee, even with the House Committee on Commerce. And let's just ask, was the issue of these kinds of community events, such as county fairs and carnivals and community events, was that issue raised in a substantive committee so as to be inclusive of all of those kinds of things for the record?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that was not a topic of discussion at full committee, but as you check your legislative record, this bill was referred to a subcommittee, even of the Committee of Commerce, and it was a topic of discussion there. That was chaired by Representative Crummell, and unfortunately, when the bill came to full committee, the discussion was not as broad because half of the committee was absent out of the building on a tour of some type. So, nonetheless, we did have five Republican members of the committee there who read the SMS, and which we, of course, did not write, but we would concur, again, with Senator Farioli that there is no singular discipline that could possibly define culture.
I think this discussion today, certainly, if we go on to those discussions and move to pass the 200,000 portion of the appropriation, that the kinds of community events, such as the Chamber Meets and Festivals, community events, ethnic festivals, carnivals, and county fairs, would certainly have a standing under Section 1, Subsection 1 of the bill.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Farrell.
I would agree that's in light of the discussion that took place in the other subcommittee. It certainly fits the description that I have in mind. I just want to make sure that there's an opportunity for full appreciation of the fact that Oregon's cultural diversity includes blue-collar, urban, rural, every strata of economic classification and ethnic diversity. And if that's the case, then I'm for it.
I do know that Representative Senator Farioli is wearing his blue shirt, and that's a blue collar comment.
Not buttoned down, but.
Sure. Representative.
I'm having great difficulty with this as well. I have spent a lifetime as a musician, singer, songwriter, performer. I see a great deal of duplication here in terms of the Oregon Historical Society, Arts Commission, Council for Humanities, Heritage. I understand the concept is to bring all of these people together. I'm having great difficulty justifying in my mind spending what affects $1.2 million on this when we face other very serious matters in this state this time. I'm not saying we can value it. I just have, I wonder very seriously from my personal political philosophy if this is a role that government should be playing. Should we be doing this? Should we be spending taxpayer money on these efforts? So I think there's duplication. I am concerned that it has to be very broad-based if it's going to pass. To include everything, all of Oregon's culture, all of Oregon's very, very diverse interests. But I'm just having great difficulty, I'm especially having great difficulty adding any additional FTE, full-time equivalencies for this in the state. We can make great cases for a lot of things in this building to spend money on, and I am having I guess I got to draw a line somewhere in some areas. And I am not in favor of doing this at this time. And I'll just state that for the record. I will not be voting in favor of this, even though my speaker has brought this issue forth.
Thank you. Other discussion?
Sure.
Yes. Representative Messer, discussion.
Sure.
Harvey, could you, I'm just curious as to why you've chosen the Economic Development Department to manage this as opposed to Department of Administrative Services or any other department?
Mr. Chair, Representative Messerly, yes. As a matter of fact, we could probably make a case for that. One, the case is such that this is not considered a long-term, full-time job. I believe that it's a misnomer that we've described this appointment of an FTE because it's not a full-time equivalent. There's a conflict between having a full-time equivalent and having a sunset commission here. So I would say that within the context of semantics, that would need to be worked out in your own mind. My personal commitment to the Speaker when she became interested in this and wanted to introduce this bill was that we were not looking for growing government. When you begin adding FTEs to the Department of Administrative Services, which stands for full-time equivalent, by the way, that you end up in a situation where you are enlarging a government body. I understand that both Speaker Snodgrass as well as Representative Krupp and a number of other colleagues in the House Republican Caucus are not happy about that. We're not interested in doing that here. We're interested in trying to implement a number of recommendations that were brought forward by 300 or 400 citizens who participated in a public process as to how we can better integrate our culture into our schools, into our communities, and create partnerships around this state that might create a little bit more harmony in our communities as opposed to the type of activities that are harmful to us as parents and our children. So.
Follow-up, please.
I'm not sure I heard your answer, Larry, as to why you chose one department over another.
We believe that the flexibility in the Economic Development Department to do a quick job and then disband is more available in the Economic Development Department than it might be in any other state agency in this in Oregon.
Yes, we do have Doris Penwell as well as Christine Darcy available.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Doris Penwell from the Economic Development Department Director's Office. To answer your question about why the Economic Development Department was selected, I think mostly because if you think about the way our organization is put together, we have a tourism commission, we have an arts commission, we're used to operating an agency that has those allied operations without actually running their programs. We provide administrative support to them and, of course, coordinate efforts when we need to. So it was sort of natural to set it up here. This, as Mr. Harvey says, is sort of a temporary situation. The bill was written so that we could get the thing going and then the task force could recommend how it would work for the future, which could include a spinoff to a private nonprofit organization to run both that, and maybe they'll have recommendations on how the fund should be operated for the future. But I think they wanted to get something going and put together a bill that was flexible enough to at least kick the effort off.
Representative Hanson, thank you. Are there further questions for Ms. Penwell?
Father, I was late. I had to testify at a committee. That's a good excuse.
Thank you for being
Do we not have already asked the commission doing this kind of a thing? You know, as I withdrew all these things, and it seems to me redundant, and I don't have any good overriding reason to have this things established to study, and to my just normal mentality, you know, I couldn't understand why this bill is needed. That's, you know, maybe someone that is not now later might have explained to me for sure. I never heard this before, so.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lamb, I could briefly respond to that, but I think some of the members that worked on the governor's task force that was very short in duration could tell you why they really believe they need to do something that pulls things together. As you say, we have an arts commission, we have a tourism commission, there is a cultural commission, there is this, that, another, and they're all dispersed in various private and public places in Oregon. It's difficult. I think they really believe that if they can pull these varying organizations together, or their need for banding together to have one method of creating some way of making contributions to some kind of a fund that can embellish the various needs of these organizations, it may be better than having all of these separate organizations trying to do their own thing and sort of stumbling over each other. They have made great strides in pulling together a lot of, quote, cultural advocates over a short period of time, and I think they feel that if they work together, they can make greater strides than if they do all these things separately. So that's why they created this temporary situation, to come up with some recommendations. They could come back to the emergency board for the funding of that endowment fund, or whatever they decided to do, plus come back to the next session with a recommendation on how to pull these efforts together.
I have a question with regard to that. If there is within the OEDD a tourism commission and an arts commission, why do we set up a cultural task force? To promote additional tourism and additional arts? I need to understand that if these are already existing in the OEDD and that's the best place to set up the fund, aren't we already duplicating some of the efforts at that point?
Mr. Chair, again, Larry Harvey, I'd be happy to respond to that. You'll notice again in Section 1 that we have a variety of disciplines represented. We don't have a community development commission per se. We don't have an education commission per se, but we do have a Department of Education. But they focus on a different aspect of how we bring our communities together. They focus specifically on what children need to know in order to achieve their STEM and their CAM. And I have no idea what that means personally, so I would be happy to again pay into the piggy bank. But so far, as a parent of a child in school, I don't have a clue what they're doing for it. Regardless, the point is here is that all of those various entities in our communities are not necessarily represented by commissions, and the charge of this task force is not to promote more tourism. The charge of this task force would be, for instance, as we have a variety of different committees in this building that all review specific subjects, regardless of what the individual committees decide or determine, at some point, those bills either go out to the floor or go to another committee for funding. Consequently, it's important that there be some type of clearinghouse or general gathering of the minds to understand that the individual parts are working together. It's a synergy process. So we would say that this task force actually serves in that same function. These different disciplines will continue to function in whatever manner they want to separately, but collectively, by pooling their resources and their ideas, the hope is that this is an opportunity to bring at least a portion of these, where these circles interconnect, together to make our communities a little bit stronger in the area of culture and our posterity.
Does this have, two questions. The governor has the community, the literal community initiatives, and that's a portion of what is being funded through part of the governor's overall trust, and certainly livability would include the appreciation for these various kinds of arts and education and heritage and history and humanities and so forth. But in addition to the livability initiative,
you get this later on in the session, and you've heard lots and lots of things about 19 new additions and additional full-time equivalencies in the Department of Transportation for the Community Solutions Team. And the Community Solutions Team would include, in addition to the 19 people out of OED or Department of Transportation, other folks from other departments for Community Solutions Teams. And I recognize that maybe the Community Solutions Teams don't sit down and talk about arts or education, but certainly they talk about tourism and community development. And you can't go to the road without giving the Historic Preservation, the State Historic Preservation Office involved. And I guess I'm feeling the same frustration as been voiced here, that they were too late on in the session where we know too much about too many other activities that seem to be portions of the same series of circles that you're saying that interconnect. They're not tangent, they actually share the same bubbles as the responsibility, and I'm becoming concerned about that. I'm not sure how many people there are involved in the governor's livability initiative. I'm not even sure where that's funded out of. I've heard him talk about it, but I've got maybe part of the 19 people that you've got no doubt for the Community Solutions Team.
Mr. Chair, the Governor's Livability Initiative has a number of pieces to it. Some of that initiative is within our budget, and it has to do with infrastructure financing. And you might recall that there are lottery back bonds that are being proposed to fund all the infrastructure that is being asked for by the governor within the Economic Development Department's budget. The Governor's Livability Initiative has no positions that are related to economic development. They do have positions for some other agencies that don't have, field, they're not structured in such a way that they have enough positions to have on-the-ground field positions. And in order to continue to work in the Community Solutions Team, three of the agencies asked for a few more positions. I don't believe there were 19. I know the transportation budget does have some. I don't have the material in front of me, but I think there were a few. I think there are six in the governor's office to coordinate all of the five state agencies, and then some of the agencies, environmental quality, land conservation, development, and transportation, asked for a few different kinds of positions. But this bill, and connecting that to this bill, our budget at Economic Development had the $200,000 plus an FTE, full-time equivalent position. And we really believe it's for a temporary situation. I guess we were a little surprised when we recognized it was a permanent position. Frankly, we think that it could be a limited duration or temporary position, and wait until the task force meets, decides what to recommend, come back to the legislature and decide what they want to do for funding or for positions or anything else. It's your wish.
Senator Ferriola is recognized.
Question, Mr. Chairman. The money that the Cultural Trust Fund investment account would be appropriated, would be continuously appropriated to the Economic Development Department. And as I understand it, the money would be invested, and then the interest thereon could be used to support cultural pursuits within the state of Oregon. Asking for an affirmation from either Ms. Benwell or Mr. Hardy.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ferriola, yes. The language in this bill is the kind of language you use if you're establishing a fund in state government. Continuous appropriation means that we can use the fund and continue the funds within the fund over more than one biennium. The money stay in the fund and continue to be used. That's the way it was established in the bill. I suspect that there may be some recommendations out of this interim task force that may have some other ideas about how they should move toward the future in terms of administering the fund. But to establish the fund, to get it going, that's the way it's written in the bill.
Mr. Chairman, is there any protection for the corpus of the fund?
What happens with the remainder of the fund then at the end of the, I guess after the year 2000, if you get a termination, of course a 501c4 probably has a definition in the C4 category of what happens to any exit funds. Do you recall what happens under your incorporating document with any excess funds and determination?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ferrioli, the 501c4, the Cultural Advocacy Coalition, has no jurisdiction over this fund now. It would not have jurisdiction over this fund without further legislative action, which would require, obviously, the 71st Legislative Assembly to then make the Cultural Advocacy Coalition the fiduciary party responsible for the expenditure of the funds. It is also perceived here that the net result would be that the legislature could always pass additional statutory language that will allow them to go back in and take the money away and spend it anywhere they want to, notwithstanding that the charge of the task force is to come back with recommendations as to how it should be protected, expended, and used for stabilization. So at this point, there is the only way to spend that money would be if the legislature passed additional language that says we want to spend the money.
Of course.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
It does, Mr. Chairman. I guess the issue is that it would be, if it continuously appropriated to the organization, or to the Economic Development Department, I assume that would mean that appropriation would be contained in your budget limitation increase. So that would be $1 million appropriated to the OEDB for the purpose of the trust. But if it's continuously appropriated, I was wondering if that refers to earnings from the trust or the trust itself.
Mr. Chair, let me make a stab at your earlier question, which was how the legislature will control what is spent. The fund is continuously appropriated. The legislature exercises its control by establishing a limitation on what is spent out of that. So you would be able to then designate, if there were funds in this account, the other fund's limitation on what they could actually spend out of that account.
And then some observations, Mr. Chairman. Everyone has proposed an expenditure, even if it appeared to be in the government's budget, that would allocate lottery funding, and I assume that's the source of the dollars. No? Source of the dollars or not? Okay, it's been beaten like a rented mule, as we've discussed the K-12 funding. And one of our subcommittees for Natural Resources hit a similar reef, and the way we solved the problem was we made the allocation to the Legislative Emergency Board of $1. And what that does is, in fact, require the Legislative Emergency Board to think through the proposals that it would receive on behalf of the organization and appropriate any amount that it saw reasonably fit to do. And what you've done is created the authority within the E-Board to act. And it may be more or less than the request. And it would be on a case-by-case basis through the biennium. And then you haven't spent or allocated $1 million that may come into play in balancing the budget in some other area. And the only downside I can see to that in this equation would be whether or not the $1 million was intended to produce some sort of interest income that would also accrue to or inure to the benefit of the cultural trust fund, because it is an investment account. And I assume that means somebody would invest it on behalf of the trust fund. So those are the two curves that cross. I guess the point is, at the other end of this budgetary process, an adjustment can be made to the allocation in the overall e-board authority. And that would, if we are able to come to closure, or when we come to closure on the budget, that would be an item that you'd go back, revisit, and adjust potentially.
Mm-hmm.
So just a suggestion for a way to move on an allocation with this budget. If you didn't want to allocate $1 million today.
This bill doesn't allocate $1 million. This bill only allocates the $200,000 to set up this joint income task force.
And we also,
whether we want to do that or not is our decision here.
Thank you, Senator Crow. But doesn't it also create a reservation of $1 million in the state?
It's already there in the
It has to be
separately allocated, and it's been discussed. It's really not anywhere to be allocated at this point, Senator, and so we don't have the ability yet. Representative made an assumption
by the legislators, right? Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm so troubled by page 2, line 31, 34, excuse me, 32 and 34, where it states that a public-private funding. And am I able to understand from what you said earlier, Mr. Harvey, and maybe explain why you can further clarify this for me, that if we don't allocate, or the emergency board does not allocate $1 million, that the private, there will not be a fundraising event for the private sector? And where I'm coming from is when I heard Mr. Harvey say that the task force would not function if there was not an allocation.
Mr. Chair, representing Mr. Lee, I guess I would say that it is worth giving the authority to establish the fund, because then then funding the work of the task force so that they could come together with recommendations on what they might do, bring it back to the legislature, and decide whether or not to allocate money to the fund. And if the legislature were to decide not to, maybe there are other mechanisms that the task force would have put together that figure out how to get private donations into some kind of a fund that starts building and operating on behalf of all of these organizations and all of their efforts. So I think it's premature to say whether they could or could not operate with whatever money may be in the endowment fund based on public investment. It's typical that a little bit of public investment brings in a lot of private investment, and I guess that's why that was recommended in this bill.
Mr. Chair, if I might add, too. Ms. Finwell has answered that quite well. That is the intention as well. We specifically, as a matter of fact, changed the language here in a couple of different things. In a couple of different areas of the bill, we specifically changed the language to make sure that it was understood that we're still encouraging private contributions. We continuously have, with regard to, so that I might be clear with regard to what the task force would do, the $200,000 is for that. If the decision on the part of the body is not to put any money in the investment account, then that could limit the types of recommendations that the task force could make, simply because they don't have any money to make recommendations from as to how that might be expended. It would not prevent the task force from going forward. They might come back with a recommendation that the legislature should have appropriated money into the trust fund. But, that's purely speculation, because we don't know the direction that they will be encouraged to take once we assemble them. But there is, will continue to be encouragement that the private sector continue to do what they've been doing, and that is supporting these organizations.
Senator Lim, did you have a comment?
Oh, yes. Thank you.
I almost forgot.
Just sponsored by a reference I had here, it's not enough. Is this at the request of someone else, or is it simply that the speaker, that the proposer?
Mr. Chair, Representative, Senator Lim, this is a collaboration. The group advocating for this is called the Cultural Advocacy Coalition. It is a broad-based organization that represents a variety of cultural groups throughout the state. They collaborated with the speaker during the interim, suggesting that there are a number of things that they would like to promote in the next legislative session. When the draft language was brought forward to the speaker's office, She was asked if she wanted to sponsor the bill, and her response was yes, and that produced the document that you have here today. It was not done, this was not an idea that she came up of her own, although she had been interacting with the group for some time and did make a variety of recommendations that resulted in a package of bills that are elsewhere in this building as well.
Thank you.
Further questions of Mr. Harvey or Ms. Fenwell? Let's see. We have Ms. Christine DeArcy.
She was just available. Too.
Just available? Okay. Other folks that have signed up or wish to give public testimony? Being none, are there any other questions that the committee has amongst itself relative to the issue? I think what we'll do is flip this over and have a work session on a later date with other testimony after the speaker returns to Washington, D.C. There will be no meeting tomorrow of this committee. I'll be out of town with the co-chair to take a look at some issues dealing with our Department of Administrative Services and computer issues and courses. So, no further business, and we'll go ahead and stand adjourned under the regular schedule. Thank you very much.